Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'm going to be reading to you today from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad, Book 13. We are now beginning the second half of the Iliad, and in Book 13, we'll find out that Zeus looks away. He turns his eyes away from the battle. And while his eyes are turned away from the battle, although the other Olympians are afraid to interfere and anger Zeus, his brother Poseidon is not afraid. And Poseidon will have a chance to help his side, the Greeks. So the Trojans have made it all the way to the Greek ships and are fighting there. And Poseidon is going to enter the battle. Poseidon will also have his Aristeia, his moment of glory in this book, and he will help the Greeks, and they will again get the upper hand as Poseidon helps them. Line 1. When Zeus had driven against the ships, the Trojans and Hector he left them beside these to endure the hard work and sorrow of fighting without respite, and himself turned his eyes shining far away, looking out over the land of the Thracian riders and the Mycians who fight at close quarters, and the proud Hippomogalae, drinkers of milk, and the Appii, most righteous of all men. He did not at all now turn his shining eyes upon Troyland, for he had no idea in mind that any one of the immortals would come down to stand by either Danaans or Trojans. Neither did the powerful shaker of the earth, Poseidon, keep blind watch, for he sat and admired the fighting and the run of the battle, aloft on top of the highest summit of timbered Samos, the Thracian place, and from there all Ida appeared before him, and the city of Priam was plain to see, and the ships of the Achaeans. There he came up out of the water, and sat, and pitied the Achaeans who were beaten by the Trojans, and blamed Zeus for it in bitterness. So presently he came down from the craggy mountain, striding on rapid feet, and the tall mountains trembled in the timber under the immortal feet of Poseidon's progress. He took 3 long strides forward, and in the 4th came to his goal, Aegae, where his glorious house was built in the water's depth, glittering with gold, imperishable forever. Going there, he harnessed under his chariot his bronze-shod horses, flying-footed, with long manes streaming of gold, and he put on clothing of gold about his own body, and took up the golden lash, carefully compacted, and climbed up into his chariot, and drove it across the waves. And about him the sea-beasts came up from their deep places, and played in his path, and acknowledged their master. Imagine the imagery here. All of these sea creatures swimming alongside Poseidon on his chariot as he races off to go join the war. And acknowledged their master, and the sea stood apart before him, rejoicing. The horses winged on delicately, line 30, and the bronze axle beneath was not wetted. The fast-running horses carried him to the ships of the Achaeans. There is a cave, broad and deep, down in the gloom of the water, lying midway between Tenedos and Imbrus of the high cliffs. There Poseidon the Shaker of the Earth reined in his horses, and slipped them from the yoke, and threw fodder immortal before them, so they could eat, and withdrew around their feet golden hobbles, not to be broken or slipped from, so they would wait there, steadfast for their lord gone. And Poseidon went to the ships of the Achaeans. But the Trojans gathered into a pack, like flame, like a storm cloud, came on after Hector the son of Priam, raging, relentless, roaring and crying as one, and their hopes ran high of capturing the ships of the Achaeans and killing the best men beside them, all of them. But Poseidon, who circles the earth and shakes it, rose up out of the deep water to stir on the Argives, line 45, likening himself in form and weariless voice to Calchas. So now Poseidon here is imitating Calchas. First he spoke to the Iontes, Ajax and Ajax, who were burning for battle already. Iontes, you too, remembering the spirit of warcraft and not that of shivering panic, must save the Achaean people. Elsewhere, in truth, I do not fear the Trojans' invincible hands, though in full force they have swarmed over our great wall. since the strong grieved Achaeans will be able to hold the rest of them. But I fear most terrible disaster to us in the one place where that berserk flame-like leads them against us, Hector, who claims he must be the son of Zeus of the high strength. May this be the message someone of the gods gives your minds to carry, that you stand fast strongly yourselves. Urge the rest to stand also. This is interesting because it's Poseidon imitating Calchas, telling them that he hopes one of the gods gives him this good idea. Line 57. Thus, hard though he sweeps on, you might stay him beside the fast-running ships, even though the very Olympian wakes him to battle. Poseidon, who circles the earth and shakes it, spoke, and striking both of them with his staff, filled them with powerful valor, and he made their limbs light, and their feet with their hands above them, and burst into winged flight himself. So Poseidon's flying away. What's it like? Like a hawk with quick wings, who from the huge height of an impassable rock, lifting leans to flight to pursue some other bird over the wide land. So Poseidon, shaker of the earth, broke away from the Iontes, and of the two, swift Aias, son of Oileus, was first to know him. Imagine that, he recognizes that a god helped him because he saw him fly away. And spoke therewith to Aias, the son of Telamon. Aias, since some one of the gods, whose hold is Olympus, has likened himself to the seer, to Calchas, and told us to fight by our vessels, this is not Calchas, the bird interpreter of the gods, for I knew easily as he went away the form of his feet, the legs form from behind him. Gods, though gods, are conspicuous. Therefore, as for me, the spirit inside my inward breast drives me all the harder to carry on the war and the fighting. Line 75. And my feet underneath me are eager and my hands above them. Aias, the son of Telamon, spoke to him in answer. So for me also, now the invisible hands on my spear shaft are furious. My strength is rising, and both feet beneath me are sweeping me onward, so that I long even for single combat with Hector, Priam's son, the forever avid of battle. That was line 80. So they got touched by Poseidon, and they both feel extra energy, you know, caffeinated. Now as these two were saying such things to each other, joyful in the delight of battle the god had put into their spirits, meanwhile the earth encircler, Poseidon, stirred up the Achaeans behind them, who were cooling the heat of the inward heart back beside their vessels, for their very limbs were broken with weariness of hard work, and also discouragement of the heart came over them as they watched the Trojans, and how in a mass they had overswarmed the great wall. As they saw them, the tears dripped from their eyes. They did not think that they could win clear of the evil, but the earth-shaker, Poseidon, lightly turning their battalions to strength, drove them onward. Line 91. He came first in encouragement to Teucros and Letos, with the fighting Peneleus and Deipeiros and Thoas and Meriones and Antilochus, both urgent for battle. Calling out to these in winged words, he rallied them onward. Shame, you Argives, young fighting men, since I, for my part, have confidence that by fighting you can save our ships from destruction. But if you yourselves are to go slack from the sorrowful fighting, now is seen your day to be beaten down by the Trojans. Oh, for shame! Here is a great strange thing I see with my own eyes, a terrible thing, line 100, and one that I thought could never happen, that the Trojans could come against our ships, they who in time past were like... What were they like in time past? Like fugitive deer before us, who in the forests are spoil for scavengers and wolves and leopards, who scatter in absolute cowardice. There is no war spirit within them. So before now the Trojans were unwilling to stand up against the strength and hands of the Achaeans, even for a little. But now, far from their city, they fight by the hollow vessels, through the weakness of our leader, and the hanging back of our people who have made their quarrel with him and will not stand in defense of the fast-running ships. Instead of this, they are killed against them. Yet even though it be utterly true that the son of Atreus, the hero, wide, powerful Agamemnon, is guilty, because he did dishonor to Peleus' son, the swift-footed Achilles, still there is no way for us now to hang back from the fighting. No, sooner let us heal it, for the hearts of great men can be healed. But you can no longer in honor give way from your fighting valor, being all the best men along the host. Even I, for my part, would not quarrel with any man who hung back from the fighting because he was a weak thing, but with you my heart must be angry. Oh, friends, line 120, soon you will bring to pass some still greater evil with this hanging back. Let every one of you plant in his heart's depth discipline and shamefastness. A big battle rises against you, for Hector of the great war cry is fighting beside our vessels in his power, and has broken our gates and the long door bar. So urging them on, the earth encircler Poseidon stirred up the Achaeans, and their battalions formed in strength about the two Iontes, Ajax and Ajax, battalions the war god could not find fault with, coming among them, nor Athena, lady of storming armies, since there the bravest formed a part and stood against the Trojans and brilliant Hector, locking spear by spear, shield against shield at the base, so buckler leaned on buckler, helmet on helmet, man against man, and the horsehair crests along the horns of their shining helmets touched as they bent their heads, so dense were they formed on each other, and the spears shaken from their daring hands made a jagged battle line. Their thoughts were driving straight ahead in the fury of fighting. Here we see that the Greeks have prepared themselves in a very stately, orderly, precise manner. Line 136. The Trojans came down on them in a pack, like a disorderly pack of dogs, and Hector led them raging straight forward, and what was it like? Like a great rolling stone from a rock face that a river swollen with winter rain has wrenched from its socket, and with immense washing broken the hold of the unwilling rock face, the springing boulder flies on, and the forest thunders beneath it, and the stone runs unwavering on a strong course till it reaches the flat land, then rolls no longer for all its onrush. That's what it was like. So Hector, for a while, threatened lightly to break through the shelters and ships of the Achaeans and reach the water, cutting his way. But when he collided with the dense battalions, he was stopped, hard, beaten in on himself. The sons of the Achaeans, against him, stabbing at him with swords and leaf-headed spears, thrust him away from them so that he gave ground backward, staggering. He lifted his voice and called in a piercing cry to the Trojans, "Trojans, Lycaeans, Dardanians, who fight at close quarters, stand with me. The Achaeans will not hold me back for a long time, for all they are building themselves into a bastion against me. No, I think they will give back under my spear, if truly I am driven by the greatest of gods, the thunderous lord of Hera." So here we find that Hector has such success, he's just positive Zeus is behind him. Line 155. So he spoke and stirred the spirit and strength in each man. Among them Deiphobus, in high purpose, had come striding, Priam's son, who held the perfect circle of his shield before him, moving lightly on his feet as he walked in the shield's protection. Meriones aimed at him with the shining spear and threw it, nor missed his mark, but struck the shield on its perfect circle of bull's hide, but the spear did not get through, but sooner the long shaft was broken behind the head. Deiphobus held the bull's hide shield away from him, his heart frightened by the spear of wise Meriones, but that hero drew back into the host of his own companions, deeply angered for two things, the broken spear and the loss of his battle. Now he's broken his spear, so Meriones will have to go back to the tents or the ships and get another spear. So he's mad at that, and went away back to the shelters of the ships of the Achaeans to bring back a long spear that was left behind in his shelter. But the rest fought on with clamor incessant rising about them. Teucrus, son of Telamon, was the first to kill his man. Imbrius, the spear-fighter, son of Mentor of the many horses, one who before the coming of the sons of the Achaeans lived in Pideus and had married a bastard daughter of Priam, Medescaecy, but when the oar-swept ships of the Danaans came, he went back to Ilion and was a great man among the Trojans, and lived at Priam's side, who honored him as he did his own children. Now the son of Telamon with the long spear stabbed him under the ear and wrenched the spear out again, and he dropped like an ash tree, which, how did he drop? On the crest of a mountain glittering far about, cut down with the bronze axe, scatters on the ground its delicate leafage. So he dropped, and the armor elaborate with bronze clashed about him. And Teucrus ran up, eager to strip the armor. As he came on, Hector threw at him with the shining javelin, but Teucrus, with his eyes straight on him, avoided the bronze spear by a little, line 185. And Hector struck Amphimachus, son of Actorion Cretus, with a spear in his chest as he swept into battle. He fell thunderously, and his armor clattered upon him. Then Hector charged in to tear the helm of the great-hearted Amphimachus from his head, where it fitted close on the brows. But Aias thrust with the shining spear at Hector as he came onward. He could not manage to reach the skin, since this was all shrouded in the ghastly bronze, but drove at the shield's mass in the middle and beat him back in great strength, so that Hector gave ground backward from both corpses. These the Achaeans dragged out of the fighting. Then Stichius and brilliant Menestheus, lords of the Athenians, carried Amphimachus back among the Achaean people. But the two Iontes, Ajax and Ajax, in the fury of their fierce war strength, what were the two Ajaxes like? As two lions catch up a goat from the guard of rip-fanged hounds and carry it into the density of the underbrush, holding it high from the ground in the crook of their jaws, so the lordly two Iontes lifted Imbrius high and stripped him of his armor, and the son of Oileus, in anger for Amphimachus, hewed away his head from the soft neck and threw it spinning like a ball through the throng of fighters until it came to rest in the dust at the feet of Hector. So Oileus threw Amphimachus's head at the feet of Hector. Aias the Lesser, Aias Oileus, is mean and brutal to this corpse. Line 206. Then Poseidon was angered about the heart at his grandson's slaying in the bitter hostility. So, you know, kill somebody that is a grandson of a god. Poseidon, through the twin Moleones, is the grandfather of Amphimachus, and his grandson was just killed. Line 206. Then Poseidon was angered about the heart at his grandson slain in the bitter hostility. So the god went forth on his way among the shelters and ships of the Achaeans, and stirred the Danaans, and worked disaster against the Trojans. Idomeneus, the spear-famed, encountered him on his way from a companion who had just come back from the fighting, wounded in the hollow behind the knee by the sharp bronze. This man his companions carried away. Idomeneus is a leading Greek, and remember, the three best are wounded. Odysseus, Agamemnon, and Diomedes are wounded, and so Idomeneus is now one of the leading Greeks, and he is going to now have his Aristeia. Line 214. Idomeneus had given the healers instructions and gone on to his shelter, still burning to face the battle, and now the strong earth-shaker spoke to him. Poseidon likened his voice to Thoas, son of Adraemon, lord of the Aetolians over all Pleuron, and headlong Calydon, who was honored in his countryside as a god is. So this is Poseidon disguised as a man. Idomeneus, lord of the Cretans' council, this is the Cretans of the island of Crete, where are those threats you gave now that the sons of the Achaeans uttered against the Trojans? Then Idomeneus, lord of the Cretans, answered him in turn, Thoas, no man is responsible for this, so far as my thought goes, since all of us understand how to wage war. It is not that heartless fear holds anyone, that a man yielding to dread emerges out of the evil fighting, but rather this way must be pleasurable to Cronos's son, Zeus, in his great strength, that the Achaeans must die here forgotten and far from Argos, since you, Thoas, have been before this a man stubborn in battle, and stirred up another whenever you saw one hang back. So now also do not give up, and urge each on as you find him. Then in answer spoke the shaker of the earth, Poseidon, disguised as Thoas, Idomeneus, may that man who this day willfully hangs back from the fighting never win home again out of Troyland, but stay here and be made dog's delight for their feasting. Come then, take up your armor and go with me. This is Poseidon. We must speed this action together, since we, being two, might bring some advantage. The warcraft, even of sad fighters combined, turns courage. To you and I would have skill to fight even against good men. So he spoke and strode on, a god through the mortals' struggle. So Poseidon is striding on through this war of mortals. Line 240. Idomeneus, when he came back to his strong-built shelter, remember he came back for a spear, drew his splendid armor over his body and caught up two spears and went on his way. And what was it like as he went on his way? As a thunderbolt, which the son of Cronos, catching up in his hand, shakes from the shining edge of Olympus, flashes as a portent to men, and the bright glints shine from it. Such was the glitter of bronze that girt his chest in his running. Close to his shelter there encountered him his strong henchman, Meriones, who was on his way to pick up a bronze spear and bring it back. Now this is very embarrassing. Eudemenes and Meriones run into each other back at camp. Very embarrassing, as though they are trying to get away from the fight. So now they're going to both have to assure each other that they're there to get speared. So he runs into his strong henchman, line 246, Meriones, who was on his way to pick up a bronze spear and bring it back. Eudemenes, in his strength, spoke to him. Meriones, son of Molos, swift-footed, dearest, beloved companion, why have you come back and left the battle and fighting? Have you been hit somewhere? Does pain of a spear's head afflict you? Have you come back with someone's message for me? For my part, my desire is to fight, not sit away in the shelters. Meriones, a thoughtful man, spoke to him in answer. Eudemenes, lord of the councils of the bronze-armored Cretans, I'm on my way to bring back a spear, if you have any left in your shelter. I broke just now the one I was carrying with a throw made against the shield of haughty Deiphobus. Then Eudemenes, lord of the Cretans, answered him in turn. You will find one spear and 20 spears, if you want them, standing against the shining inward wall in my shelter. Trojan spears I win from men that I kill, for my way is not to fight my battles, standing far away from my enemies. Thereby I have spears there, and shields massive in the middle, and helms, line 265, and corslets are there in all the pride of their shining. Meriones, a thoughtful man, spoke to him in answer, for me also, beside my shelter and beside my black ship, there are many spoils of the Trojans, but not near for me to get them. For I tell you, neither am I one who has forgotten his war of strength, but among the foremost, along the fighting men, fighting where men win glory, Kleos, I take my stand whenever the quarrel of battle arises. Let my fighting be forgotten by some bronze-armored Achaean. You are the very one, I think, must know it. Then Eudemenes, lord of Cretans, answered him in turn, I know your valor and what you are. Why need you speak of it? If now beside the ship all the best of us were to assemble for a hidden position, and there man's courage is best decided, where the man who is a coward and the brave man shows themselves clearly, and the skin of the cowards changes color one way or another, and the heart inside him has no control to make it sit steady, but he shifts his weight from one foot to the other, then settles firmly on both feet, and the heart inside his chest pounds violent as he thinks of the death spirits, and his teeth chatter together. But the brave man's skill will not change color, nor is he too much frightened once he has taken his place in the hidden position. But his prayer is to close as soon as may be in bitter division, and there may no man could make light of your battle strength or your hand's work, even were you to be wounded in your work with spear cast or spear stroke. The weapon would not strike behind your neck, you would not be running away, nor in your back, line 290, but would be driven straight against the chest or the belly as you made your way onward through the meeting of champions. So Eudemenes and Meriones are assuring each other that they can tell they're not afraid just by looking at one another. But come, let us no longer stand here talking of these things like children, for fear some man may arrogantly scold us. Go to my shelter and choose for yourself a heavy spear. So he spoke. Meriones, a match for the rapid war god, went into the shelter rapidly and took up a bronze spear, and with his mind deeply set on battle, followed Eudemenes. What was it like, the two of them going, Meriones and Eudemenes? As man-slaughtering Ares is when he strides into battle and terror goes on beside him, his beloved son, the powerful and dauntless, who frightens even the patient-hearted warrior. These two come out of Thrace to encounter in arms the Ephroi or the great-hearted Phlegys, but the two will not listen to prayers from both sides, but give the glory to one side or the other. Such were Meriones and Eudemenes, leaders of armies. So Meriones and Eudemenes are just like Ares and his son Terror. Leaders of armies, line 305, as they went on into the fighting, helmed in the bright bronze. First of the two, Meriones, spoke his word to Eudemenes. Eudocalides, after his father, where are you minded to enter the battle? Would it be on the right side of the whole array, or in the center, or to the left? Where should we join the battle? Since I think that nowhere else in the fighting are the flowing-haired Achaeans overmatched so badly. Eudemenes, lord of the Cretans, answered him in turn. There are others besides us to defend the ships in the center, the two Iontes, Ajax and Ajax, and Teucrus, best of all the Achaeans in archery, and a good man in the close of standing combat. They can give Hector, Priam's son, enough hard hitting, even though he is very strong and sweeps hard in battle. Furious though he is for fighting, it will be very steep work for him to win through their irresistible hands and their war strength and fire the ships, unless the son of Cronos, Zeus, in person should hurl the blazing firebrand into our fast-running vessels. So he doesn't think they need to go straight to the ship's center where Hector is, because unless Zeus himself sends a thunderbolt down to set him on fire, probably they have men that will protect it. Line 321. Nor would huge Telamonian Aias give way to any man, one who was mortal and ate bread, the yield of Demeter, one who could be broken by the bronze and great stones flung at him. He would not make way for Achilles, who breaks men in battle in close combat. For speed of feet none can strive with Achilles. Hold as you say for the left of the armor, and thus soonest shall we see whether we win glory, Cleos, or give it to others. He spoke, and Meriones, a match for the running war god, led the way till they came to the place in the army he spoke for. Line 330. These, as they saw Idomeneus like a flame in his valor himself, and his henchmen with him in their elaborate war gear, they called out across the battle and gathered about him, and an indiscriminate fight rose up by the sterns of the vessels. What was that fight like? And, as when under the screaming winds the whirlstorms bluster on that day, when the dust lies deepest along the pathways, and the winds in the confusion of dust uplift a great cloud, such was their indiscriminate battle, and their hearts were furious to slaughter each other with the sharp bronze through the press of the fighting. The battle where men perish shuddered now with the long, man-tearing spears they held in their hands. Their eyes were blinded in the dazzle of the bronze light from the glittering helmets, from the burnished corselets and the shining shields, as men came on in confusion. That man would have to be very bold-hearted, who could be cheerful and not stricken, looking on that struggle. Two powerful sons of Cronos. And here Homer begins at line 345. He begins to summarize the divine actions of the war. The two powerful sons of Cronos. This is Zeus and Poseidon. Two powerful sons of Cronos, hearts divided against each other, were wreaking bitter agonies on the fighting warriors. Since Zeus willed the victory for the Trojans, and Hector, glorifying swift-footed Achilles, yet not utterly did he wish the Achaean people to be destroyed before Ilion, but only was giving glory to Thetis and her strong-spirited son. While, on the other hand, Poseidon, emerging unseen from the gray salt water, went among the Argives and stirred them, since he was angered that they were beaten by the Trojans, and he blamed Zeus for it bitterly. Indeed, the two were of one generation, Zeus and Poseidon. They were of one generation and a single father, but Zeus was the elder born and knew more. Therefore, Poseidon shrank from openly defending them, but secretly, in a man's likeness, was forever stirring them up through the army. So these two had looped over both sides a crossing cable of strong discord, and the closing of battle, not to be slipped, not to be broken, which unstrung the knees of many. There Idomeneus, graying though he was, so he's an older man, there Idomeneus, graying though he was, called on the Danaans and charged in upon the Trojans and drove panic among them, for he killed Orthonius, a man who had lived in Cabessus, who was newly come in the wake of the rumor of war, and had asked Priam for the hand of the loveliest of his daughters, Cassandra, without bride price, but had promised a great work for her to drive back the unwilling sons of the Achaeans from Troyland, and aged Priam had bent his head in assent and promised to give her. So Orthrianus fought in the faith of his promises. Here we have the story of Orthrianus, and he's come to Priam. He didn't have money, but he wants to marry Cassandra, and says, can I marry her if I can beat back the Greeks? And Priam said, yes, he can. Line 370. Idomeneus aimed at him with the shining spear and threw it, and hit him as he came onward with high stride, and the corselet of bronze he wore could not hold. The spear fixed in the middle belly, he fell thunderously, and Idomeneus, vaunting, cried out, Orthinius, I congratulate you beyond all others, if it is here that you will bring to pass what you promised to to Dardanian Priam, who in turn promised you his daughter. See now, and this is the poor Orthinius is dying, and this is Idomeneus vaunting over him. So now, we also would make you a promise, and we would fulfill it. We would give you the loveliest of Atreides, Agamemnon's or Menelaus's, daughters, and bring her here from Argos to be your wife if you joined us and helped us storm the strong-founded city of Ilion. Come then with me, so we can meet by our seafaring vessels about a marriage. We here are not bad matchmakers for you. The hero Idomeneus spoke and dragged him through the strong encounter, caught by the foot. But now Asius came to stand by him, dismounted, ahead of his horses, whom his henchmen held ever behind him, so that they breathed on his shoulders. He was striving in all his fury to strike Idomeneus, but he, too quick with a spear cast, struck him in the gorge underneath the chin, and drove the bronze clean through. He fell. So now he got his Idomeneus, here in the middle of his aristeia, got not only Orthronius, he also got his henchman. He fell, as when an oak goes down, or a white poplar like a towering pine tree, which in the mountains the carpenters have hewn down with their whetted axes to make a ship timber. So he lay there, felled in front of his horses and chariot, roaring and clawed with his hands at the bloody dust. Meanwhile, the charioteer who was close behind him was stricken in his wits, and shrinking from the hands of the enemy, did not have daring to turn the horses about. But Antilochus, stubborn in battle, pinned him through the middle with a spear stroke, and the corslet of bronze he wore could not hold. The spear fixed in the middle belly, so that he tumbled, gasping, out of the strong wrought chariot. But for the horses, line 400, Antilochus, son of the great-hearted Nestor, drove them away from the Trojans among the strong-greaved Achaeans. Deiphobus, in sorrow for Asius, now came close in on Idomeneus, and with the bright spear made a cast at him. But Idomeneus, with his eyes straight on him, avoided the bronze spear, since he also was hidden beneath his shield's perfect circle. That shield he carried, hooped in circles of glaring bronze, and the skins of oxen fitted with double cross-stays. He was all gathered together under this, and the brazen spear shot over him, and the shield gave out a hollow clash as the spear glanced from it. Yet Deiphobus made no utterly vain cast from his strong hand, but struck Hypsenor, son of Hippasus, shepherd of the people, in the liver under the midriff, and at once took the strength from his knees. And Deiphobus vaunted terribly over him, and Deiphobus is Hector's brother, vaunted terribly over him, calling in a great voice, "Asius lies not now all unavenged. I think rather as he goes down to Hades of the gates, the strong one, he will be cheerful at heart, since I've sent him an escort." So this poor guy has a spear sticking out of him right through the liver, I believe it said, and, you know, leaning on it, and he says he has sent him an escort to go. He spoke, and sorrow came over the Argives at his vaunting, and beyond others stirred the spirit in wise Antilochus. Yet, sorrowful though he was, he did not forget his companion, but running, stood and bestrode him, and covered him under the great shield. Thereon, Mecisteus, son of Echius, and brilliant Alastor, two staunch companions, stooping beneath it, caught up Hypsenor, and carried him, groaning heavily, to the hollow vessels. Idomeneus did not slacken his great fury, but always was straining to shroud some one of the Trojans in dark night, or go down crashing himself as he fought the bane from the Achaeans. There was a man, loved of illustrious Aestes, the hero Alcathous, who was the son-in-law of Anchises, and Anchises, remember, is married to Aphrodite, and he is the father of Aeneas. Anchises is the second cousin of Priam. So the hero Alcathous, who was son-in-law of Anchises, and had married the eldest of his daughters, Hippodamia, dear to the hearts of her father and the lady her mother in the great house, since she surpassed all the girls of her own age for beauty and accomplishments and wit, for which reason the man married her who was the best in the wide Troad. But now Poseidon beat him down at the hands of Idomeneus, for he bewitched with shining eyes, it made moveless his bright limbs, so that he could not run backward, neither evade him, but stood like a statue or a tree with leaves towering motionless, while fighting Idomeneus stabbed at the middle of his chest with the spear and broke the bronze armor about him, which in time before had guarded his body from destruction. Line 441. He cried out then, a great cry, broken, the spear in him, and fell thunderously. And the spear in his heart was stuck fast, but the heart was panting still and beating to shake the butt end of the spear. Then and there, Ares the huge took his life away from him. Ares here is just death personified. Ares is not on the battlefield. Then and there, Ares the huge took his life away from him. Idomeneus vaunted terribly over him, calling in a great voice, Deiphobus, are we then to call this a worthy bargain? Three men killed for one? It was you yourself were so boastful, strange man. Do you rather come yourself and stand up against me, so you can see what I am like, Zeus's seed? Come here to face you. Zeus's seed come here to face you. Zeus and Europa produced their son Minos, who was the king of Crete, famous King Minos, who had Deucalion, who then had Idomeneus. So this makes Zeus the great-grandfather of Idomeneus. So he says, do you rather come yourself and stand up against me, so you can see what I am like, Zeus's seed, come here to face you? Line 450. Since Zeus first got by Crete, Minos, who cared for his people, and to Minos in turn was born a blameless son, Deucalion, and Deucalion sired me to be lord over many people in wide Crete, the island of Crete, and now my ships have brought me to this place to be an evil for you and your father and the rest of the Trojans. So he spoke, and the heart in Deiphobus was divided, pondering. So now Deiphobus has to decide. This is the brother of Hector, and he has to decide whether to try and fight this man alone or go get someone else to fight him now that he knows he's a great-grandson of a god. So the heart in Deiphobus was divided, pondering whether to draw back and find some other high-hearted Trojan to be his companion or whether to attempt him singly. And in the division of his heart, this way seemed best to him, to go for Aeneas. He found him at the uttermost edge of the battle, because Aeneas' mother is Aphrodite. He found him at the uttermost edge of the battle, standing, since he was forever angry with brilliant Priam, because great as he was, he did him no honor among his people. Deiphobus came and stood close to him and addressed him in winged words. So these are two half-brothers by Priam with other mothers. Aeneas, lord of the Trojans' councils, now there is need of you to stand by your brother-in-law, if this bond of kinship touches you. Come then, stand by Alcathous, who was your sister's husband, and in time past nursed you in his house when you were still little, but now Idomeneus, the spear-famed, has killed him in battle. So he spoke and stirred the anger in the breast of Aeneas. He went against Idomeneus, strongly eager for battle, yet no fear gripped Idomeneus, as if he were a stripling, but he stood his ground. And how did Idomeneus stand his ground? Like a mountain wild boar, who in the confidence of his strength stands up to a great rabble of men advancing upon him in some deserted place and bristles his back up, and both his eyes are shining with fear. He grinds his teeth in his fury to fight off the dogs and the men. That's what it was like. So spear-famed Idomeneus held his ground and would not give way to Aeneas coming against him, but bellowed to his companions, looking to Ascalaphus and Aphareus and Dipyros and at Meriones and Entelechus, both urgent for battle. Line 480. And stirring all these forward, called out to them in winged words, this way, friends, stand by me. I am alone, and terribly I feel the attack of swift-footed Aeneas advancing upon me, powerful as he is for the slaying of men in battle. So Aeneas is the son of the human Anchises and the goddess Aphrodite. If you want to know Aeneas's destiny, of course we'll read about his destiny in the Aeneid, but we can look forward to Iliad book 20, beginning at line 302, and see Aeneas's destiny. I fear the attack of swift-footed Aeneas advancing upon me, powerful as he is for the slaying of men in battle. Likewise, the flower of youth is his, where man's strength is highest. Since were we two of the same age, and in this same spirit, soon he would win me in a great battle, or I would win him. And so here, Idomeneus says, I could fight Aeneas alone if I was as young as he is, but I'm not. So he spoke, and all these, a single spirit within them, came and stood in their numbers and sloped their shields over his shoulders. And Aeneas on the other side called to his own companions, looking to Deiphobus and to Paris and brilliant Agenor, who were lords of the Trojans along with him, and the people after them followed on. What was it like, Paris leading all these people, Aeneas leading all these people on? As when the sheep follow the lead ram as they leave the pasture to drink and make proud the heart of the shepherd? And thus also the heart of Aeneas was gladdened within him as he saw the swarm of the host following his own leadership. 9496. These then drove on in close combat about Alcathous with long spears, and the bronze girding the chests of the fighters clashed horribly to the spears they threw in at the press at each other. And two men for warcraft preeminent beyond all others, Aeneas and Idomeneus, both men like the war god, like Ares, were straining with the pitiless bronze to tear at each other. Aeneas was first with a spear cast at Idomeneus, but he, keeping his eyes straight on him, avoided the bronze spear, so that the vibrant shaft of Aeneas was driven groundward, since it had been thrown in a vain cast from his big hand. But Idomeneus hit Oenomaus in the middle belly and broke the hollow of the corslet, so that the entrails, his guts, spurted from the bronze, and he fell clawing the dust in his fingers. Idomeneus wrenched out the far-shadowing spear from his body, but had no power to strip the rest of his splendid armor away from his shoulders, since he was being beaten back by their missiles, and no longer in an outrush could his limbs stay steady beneath him, either to dash in after his spear or to get clear again. So, in close standing fight, he beat off the pitiless death day, as his feet, no longer quick to run, took him out of the fighting. As he backed slowly, Deiphobus made a cast with the shining spear, since he held a fixed hatred forever against him, but missed him yet once again, and struck down with the spear the war god's son, Ascalaphus. So now Deiphobus, the brother of Hector, has killed at one of Ares' sons, Ascalaphus, so that the powerful spear was driven through his shoulder, and he, dropping in the dust, clawed the ground in his fingers. But Ares the huge and bellowing had yet heard nothing of how his son had fallen there in the strong encounter. But he, sheltered under the golden clouds on utmost Olympus, was sitting, held fast by command of Zeus, where the rest also of the immortal gods were sitting still in restraint from the battle. So most of the Olympians don't even know what's going on just beside me here. So Ares doesn't even know his son was just killed. Line 526. But the men drove on in close combat about Ascalaphus. Deiphobus tore from Ascalaphus the shining helmet, so now they're stripping him. But now Meriones, a match for the running war god, plunging upon him, stabbed his arm with the spear, and the hollow-eyed helmet dropped from his hand and fell to the ground, clashing. Meriones, in yet another swoop, like a vulture, plucked out the heavy spear from the arm's base at the shoulder, then shrank into the host of his own companions. Polites, Deiphobus' brother, caught him about the waist with both arms and got him out of the sorrowful fighting and reached his fast-footed horses, where they stood to the rear of the fighting, and the battle holding their charioteer and the elaborate chariot, and these carried him, groaning heavily, back to the city in pain, since the blood was running from his arm's fresh wound. But the rest fought on with clamor incessant rising about them. Line 541. There Aeneas, lunging at Aphareus, the son of Caletor, struck him with the sharp spear in the throat, where it was turned toward him. His head bent over to one side, and his shield tumbled, and the helm and death-breaking the spirit drifted about him. Antilochus, this is the great-grandson of Poseidon, and Poseidon had Neleus, who had Nestor, who had Antilochus. Antilochus, line 545, watching Theoon as he turned about, dashed in on him and slashed at him, and tore away the entire vein which runs all the way up the back till it reaches the neck. This he shore away entire, so he sprawled in the dust backward, reaching out both hands to his beloved companions. Antilochus rushed on him, trying to strip the armor from his shoulders, but watchful, as the Trojans gathered about him from all sides and beat at the shining broad shield, but could not get within it and tear with the pitiless bronze Antilochus's tender flesh. For about him the earth-shader Poseidon guarded the son of Nestor, even in the swarm of missiles. So Poseidon has close connections to Pylos. You know, he's the father of Neleus and the great-grandfather here of Antilochus, and he is protecting him. Line 556. Since he was not making his way back clear of the enemy, but would turn to face them, nor held motionless his spear, always it was shaken or driven forward, the desire in his heart forever to strike someone with a spear cast or drive at him in close combat. Adamas, Asius's son, was not blind to how he kept aiming with his spear in the battle, and charging close, stabbed with the sharp bronze at the shield's middle. But Poseidon the dark-haired made void his spear's stroke, nor would let him win the life of Antilochus. And half of the spear stuck fast like a stake fire-hardened in Antilochus's shield, and the other half lay on the ground. To avoid death, he shrank into the host of his own companions. But as he went back, Meriones dogging him, so Poseidon has protected him this whole time, Antilochus, his great-grandson. But as he went back, Meriones dogging him through with the spear and struck between navel and genitals, where between beyond all places death in battle comes painfully to pitiful mortals. And what we'll notice about Meriones is that he's very cruel. Meriones always kills cruelly. We saw this in Book 5, line 65, and we will see it. We already saw it in line 651 of Book 13. Meriones kills very cruelly. So he hits him in a very tender place, so death will be very painful. Line 570. There the spear struck, fast driven, and he, writhing about it, gasped. How did poor Meriones gasp, with his grandfather right there, great-grandfather watching on? As an ox does, when among the mountains the herdsmen have bound him strongly in twisted ropes and drag him unwilling, so he, Antilochus, stricken, gasped for a little while, but not long, until fighting Meriones came close and wrenched the spear out from his body, and a mist of darkness closed over both eyes. But Helenus, closing, struck Dipyrus on the temple with a huge Thracian sword, and broke the helmet to pieces so that it was knocked off and fell to the ground. An Achaean picked it up where it rolled among the feet of the fighters, but the darkness of night misted over the eyes of Dipyrus. Then sorrow caught Atreus' son Menelaus of the great war cry, and he came on menacing and shaking his sharp spear at Helenus, the lord and fighter, who pulled against him the bow at the hand grip, and both let fly at each other together, one with a sharp spear and a javelin cast, and one with the arrow from the bowstring. Line 586. The son of Priam, this is Helenus, he's also a seer, remember that, the son of Priam hit him then on the chest with an arrow in the hollow of the corslet, but the bitter arrow sprang far back. What was it like? As along a great threshing floor, the broad blade of a shovel, the black-skinned beans and the chickpeas bounce high under the bristling blast and the sweep of the winnowing fan, that's what it was like, so back from the corslet of glorious Menelaus, the bitter arrow rebounded far away, being driven hard back. But Atreus' son Menelaus of the great war cry struck him, I think this is Helenus, in the hand where he held the polished bow, and the bronze spear was driven clean on through the bow and the hand beyond it. To avoid death he shrank into the host of his own companions, dangling his wounded hand and dragging the ash spear with it. But great-hearted Agenor drew from his hand the spear and bound up his hand with a careful twist of wool fleece in a sling the henchman held for the shepherd of the people. Line 601. Pisandrus came on straight against Menelaus the glorious, but an evil destiny led him toward death's end, to be beaten down by you, Menelaus, in the stark encounter. Now when these in their advance were close to each other, the son of Atreus missed with his throw, and the spear was turned past him. But Pisandrus stabbed with the spear at the shield of glorious Menelaus, but could not drive the bronze all the way through it, for the wide shield held against it, and the spear shaft was broken behind the head. Yet he was light-hearted and hopeful of victory, drawing his sword with the silver nails, the studs. The son of Atreus sprang at Pisandrus, who underneath his shield's cover gripped his beautiful axe with the strong bronze blade upon a long polished axe handle of olive wood. They made their strokes at the same time, and Pisandrus chopped at the horn of the helmet crested with horsehair at the very peak. Menelaus struck him, as he came onward, in the forehead. over the base of the nose and smashed the bones so that both eyes dropped bloody and lay in the dust at his feet before him. He fell curling, and Menelaus, setting his heel on his chest, stripped off his armor and spoke exulting over him. So this is Menelaus vaunting. And Menelaus is vaunting, telling them they have committed hubris, they have abused the guest-host relationship, the Xenia. So Menelaus exults over him, vaunting, line 620. So I think shall you leave the ships of the fast-mounted Danans, you haughty Trojans, never to be glutted with the grim war noises, nor go short of all that other shame and defilement wherewith you defiled me, wretched dogs, because they stole his wife. And your hearts knew no fear at all of the hard anger of Zeus' loud thundering, the guest's god, the god of Xenia, who some day will utterly sack your steep city, Troy. You who in vanity went away, taking with you my wedded wife, Helen, and many possessions, when she had received you in kindness. And now once more you rage among our seafaring vessels to throw deadly fire on them and kill the fighting Achaeans. Line 630. But you will be held somewhere, though you be so headlong for battle. Father Zeus, they say your wisdom passes all others, of men and gods, and yet from you all this is accomplished, the way you give these outrageous people your grace, these Trojans, whose fighting strength is a thing of blind fury, nor can they ever be glutted full of the close encounters of deadly warfare. Since there is satiety in all things, in sleep and love-making, in the loveliness of singing and in the innocent dance, in all these things a man will strive sooner to win satisfaction than in war, but in this the Trojans cannot be glutted. The Trojans just can't get enough war. Line 640. So Menelaus the blameless spoke, and stripping the body armor away from his body gave it to his companions, and turned back himself to merge in the ranks of the champions. Now there sprang forth against him the son of King Pylaemenes, Harpalion, who had followed his father into the fighting at Troy, and did not come home again to the land of his fathers. He, from close up, stabbed with his spear at the shield of Atreides in the middle, but could not drive the bronze all the way through it. To avoid death, he shrank into the host of his own companions, looking all about him, for fear somebody might wound him with the bronze. But as he went back, line 650, Meriones let fly at him, and remember how cruel Meriones is, Meriones let fly at him with a bronze-shod arrow and hit him beside the right buttock, so that the arrow was driven on through under the bone to fix in the bladder. There, sitting among the arms of his beloved companions, he gasped out his life, then lay like a worm extended along the ground, and his dark blood drenched the ground in its running. And the great-hearted Paphlagonians busied about him, lifted him into a chariot, and brought him to sacred Ilion in sorrow. And his father, weeping tears, remember he's a prince, his father's a king, and his father, weeping tears, walked beside them, and no man-price came his way for his son slain. They couldn't go and ask his father for a ransom because they killed him. And very interesting here, Homer forgot here in Book 13, line 650s, he forgot that this kid's father, this prince's father, already died. The father died in Book 5 at line 578. And here he says the father walked beside them weeping tears, and no man price came his way for his sons slain. Line 660. But Paris was deeply angered at heart for this man slain, since he was his guest friend among many Paphlagonians, and in anger for him he also let fly a bronze-shod arrow. There was a man, Euchenor, son of the seer Pelides, a rich man and good, who lived in his house at Corinth. This is the same Corinth as the Bible. Who lived in his house at Corinth, who well knew that it was his death when he went on shipboard, since many times the good old man Pelides had told him that he must die in his own house of a painful sickness, or go with the ships of the Achaeans and be killed by the Trojans. And this man had chosen to come and be killed by the Trojans. He therefore chose to avoid the troublesome price the Achaeans would ask, and the hateful sickness, so his heart might not be afflicted. Paris struck him by jaw and ear, and at once the life spirit fled from his limbs, and the hateful darkness closed in about him. So they fought on in the likeness of blazing fire. But meanwhile, Hector, beloved of Zeus, had not heard of this, and knew nothing of how to the left of the ships his people were being slaughtered by the Argives, and glory for the Achaeans might even have been accomplished. Such was Poseidon, who circles the earth and shakes it as he stirred on the Argives and fought for them in his own strength. But Hector held, where first he had broken away through the rampart and the gates, and shattered the close ranks of the armored Danaans, line 681, where lay the ships of Aias and the ships of Protesilaus, hauled up along the beach of the gray sea, and above these the wall they had built lay lowest, and there beyond other places dangerous was the onslaught of the Trojans and of their horses. There the Boeotians and the Ionians with their trailing tunics, and the Ionians are the Athenians. This is the only occurrence of this division of race in Homer, where it has Boeotians and Ionians with their trailing tunics. The Locrians and the Pythians with their shining epions tried to hold him as he swept hard for the ships, but they could not avail to beat brilliant flame like Hector back from them. There were also the chosen Athenian men, and among them Petius's son Menestheus was lord, and there followed with him Phidias and Stichius and strong Bias. But the Epians were led by Meges, Phileus's son, Amphion and Dracius, and before the Pythians were Medon and battle-stubborn Podarces. Now of these one, Medon, was bastard son of Oileus, the godlike. Medon is the half-brother of Aias's son of Oileus, but he lived away from home due to blood guilt. He'd accidentally killed somebody and he had to live away from home. Now of these one, Medon, was bastard son of Oileus, the godlike, and brother of Aias. This is line 695. Yet he was living away from the land of his fathers in Phileci, since he had killed a man, the brother of Eurypus, his stepmother and wife of Oileus. But the other was son of Iphiclus, the son of Philicus, and these in arms at the forefront of the great-hearted Pythians fought beside the Boeotians in defense of their vessels. But swift Aias, the son of Oileus, would not at all now take his stand apart from Telamonian Aias, not even a little. What was it like? He wouldn't stay apart from Telamonian Aias. But as two wine-colored oxen, straining with even force, dragged the compacted plow from the fallow land, and for both of them at the base of the horns the dense sweat gushes, only the width of the polished yoke keeps a space between them as they toil down the furrow till they share cuts till the share cuts the edge of the plow land. So Telamonian Aias are Aias and Telamonian Aias, the two Aiases will not separate. They're just like two oxen at a plow. Line 708. So these two took their stand in battle, close to each other. Now with the son of Telamon, many people and brave ones followed his companions and took over the great shield from him, whenever the sweat and the weariness came over his body. But no Locrians went with the great-hearted son of Oileus. The heart was not in them to endure close-standing combat, for they did not have the brazen helmets crested with horsehair. They did not have the strong circled shields and the ash spears, but rather these had followed to Ilion with all their confidence in their bows and slings, strong twisted of wool, and with these they shot their close volleys and broke the Trojan battalions. So now these others fought in front in elaborate war gear against the Trojans and Hector the brazen helmed, and the Locrians, unseen, volleyed from behind. So the Trojans remembered nothing of the joy of battle, since the shafts struck them to confusion. Now pitifully the Trojans might have gone back from the shelters and the ships to windy Ilion, had not Polydamas come and stood beside bold Hector and spoken a word to him. "Hector, you are too intractable to listen to reason. Because the god has granted you the actions of warfare, therefore you wish in counsel also to be wise beyond others. But you cannot choose to have all gifts given to you together. To one man the god has granted the actions of warfare, to one to be a dancer, and another the lyre and the singing, and in the breast of another Zeus of the wide brows establishes wisdom, a lordly thing, and many take profit beside him, and he saves many. But the man's own thought surpasses all others. Now I will tell you the way that it seems best to my mind." So this man is telling Hector, "You're a good fighter, but Polydamas says, I offer you counsel. I'm better in counsel. Now I will tell you the way that it seems best to my mind." Line 736. "For you, everywhere, the fighting burns in a circle around you. But of the great-hearted Trojans, since they crossed over the rampart, some are standing back in their war gear. Others are fighting, fewer men against many, being scattered among the vessels. Draw back now, and call to this place all of our bravest, and then we might work out together our general counsel, whether we can fall upon their benched ships, if the god might be willing to give such power to us, or whether thereafter we can win away from the ships unhurt, since I fear the Achaeans might wreak on us requital for yesterday, since beside their ships lurks a man insatiate of fighting, and I think we can no longer utterly hold him from the fighting." So spoke Polydamas, and this counsel of safety pleased Hector, and at once in all his armor he leapt to the ground from his chariot, and spoke to him, and addressed him in winged words. "Polydamas," line 751, "do you rather call back to their place all of our bravest? I am going over there to meet the attack, and afterwards I will come back soon, when I have properly given my orders." So he spoke, and went on his way like a snowy mountain. This is one of the shortest similes in the Iliad, like a snowy mountain. "Calling aloud, and swept through the Trojans and their companions, but the rest of them rallied quickly around the son of Panthous, courtly Polydamas, each as they heard the command of Hector. But Hector ranged the ranks of the foremost fighters, searching for Deiphobus, and the strength of Helenus the prince, and for Asius' son Adamas, and Asius Hercetus' son, if he might find them, but found them no longer utterly unwounded or living. But some were lying along the sterns of Achaean vessels, Greek vessels, those who had lost their lives at the hands of the Argives, the Greeks, and others were lying away inside the city with arrow or spear wounds. They had been taken back to Troy." Line 765. "But he found one man away to the left of the sorrowful battle." So he found one guy, unhurt, way off to the left, way out of the battle, brilliant Alexandrus, the lord of lovely-haired Helen, encouraging his companions and urging them on into battle. Hector came and stood near, and in words of shame he rebuked him. "Evil Paris, beautiful woman crazing, cajoling, where is Deiphobus gone and the strength of the prince Helenus, Adamas, Asius' son, and Asius, son of Hercetus? Where is Orithemius? Now all steep Ilion, Troy, is lost utterly. Now your own headlong destruction is certain." Then in turn, Alexandrus the godlike answered him. Line 775. "Hector, since it is your pleasure to blame me when I am blameless, it would be better some other time to withdraw from the fighting than now. My mother, Aphrodite, bore me not utterly lacking in warcraft, for since that time when by the ships you wakened the battle of our companions, we have stayed here and fought the Danaans without end, and our companions are killed, you ask for. Only Deiphobus and the strength of the prince Helenus have gone away, wounded each in the hand by strokes of the long spears. But the son of Cronos, Zeus, fended death from them. Now lead on wherever your heart and spirit command you." So everybody but Deiphobus and Helenus are dead. They're just wounded. "Now lead on wherever your heart and spirit command you," line 785, "and we shall follow you eagerly. I think that we shall not come short in warcraft, insofar as the strength stays with us. But beyond his strength no man can fight, although he be eager." So the hero spoke and persuaded the heart of his brother. They went on to where the clamor and fighting were greatest, about Cebriones and Polydamas the blameless, about Phalces and Orthaeus, and godlike Polyphetes, Palmes and Ascanius, and Mores, son of Hippotion, who had come over in their turn from fertile Ascania on the dawn before, just arrived the day before. And now Zeus stirred them into the fighting, and they went out. So these fresh men went out, and how did they go out? "As out of the racking winds, the storm blast that underneath the thunderstroke of Zeus' father drives downward and with gigantic clamor hits the sea, and the numerous boiling waves along the length of the roaring water bend and whiten to foam in ranks one upon another." That's what it was like. "So the Trojans," line 800, "closing in ranks, some leading and others after them, in the glare of bronze armor, followed their leaders. And Hector led them, Priam's son, a man like the murderous war god Ares, and held the perfect circle of his shield before him, fenced deep in skins, with a great fold of bronze beaten upon it, and about his temples was shaken as he went the glittering helmet. He would step forward to probe the Achaean battalions at all points, if they might give way where he stalked on under his shield's cover, but could not so confuse the heart in the breasts of the Achaeans. Aias was first to take long strides forward and challenge him. Man, you are mad! Come closer! Why, try this way to terrify the Argives. It is not that we are so unskilled in fighting, but by the wicked whiplash of Zeus we Achaeans are beaten. I suppose, then, your heart is hopeful utterly to break up our ships?
We too have prompt hands among us, strong to defend them. Rather, far before this, your own strong-founded citadel, Troy, must go down under our hands, stormed and utterly taken. And as for yourself, I say that the time is close when in flight you will pray to Zeus's father and the other immortals that your bright-maned horses might be swifter than hawks are as they carry you through the stirred dust of the plain to your city. And, of course, this will turn out to be true. And as he spoke so, an ominous bird winged by at his right hand. This should have worried Hector, and he should have thought, oh no, maybe this is a prophecy. A towering eagle, and the host of the Achaeans, made brave by the bird sign, shouted, but glorious Hector, ignored this omen to his own harm, but glorious Hector answered him, I ask you, inarticulate ox, what is this you have spoken? If I could only be called son of Zeus of the Aegis all the days of my life, and the lady Hera, my mother, and I be honored as Apollo and Athena are honored, so surely as this is a day that brings evil to the Argives, all, and you will be killed with the rest of them, if you have daring to stand up against my long spear, which will bite your delicate body, yet then you will glut the dogs and birds of the Trojans with fat and flesh, struck down beside the ships of the Achaeans. So here Hector has brushed aside this omen. So he spoke and led the way, and the rest of them followed with unearthly clamor, and all the people shouted behind him. But the Argives on the other side cried out, and would not forget their warcraft, but stood the attack of the bravest Trojans, and the clamor from both was driven high to Zeus's shining ether. And of the four elements, earth, sky, water, fire, there is sometimes a fifth element, and that's the ether, which is the air way, 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 way up high. And so in